fun.
Welcome to Learn Videography, a podcast dedicated to mastering the art and business of becoming a full-time videographer. Presented by Industry Jump. Hosted by director Kyle Loftus and producer JJ Englert. Let's go.
Welcome back to Learn Videography, your podcast. Learn everything you need to know about becoming a full-time videographer. As always, I'm your host, JJ Englert. Here with my co-host, Kyle Loftus. And we have a super special guest bringing him back to the podcast, Josiah Moore. He's a creative based in upstate New York. Yes, that's right. Same city as me. He specializes in directing, cinematography, and VFX. He pulls off the craziest, wildest concepts. And today, we're going to be talking to him about his latest project, which was a Star Wars spec project that went viral. He just destroyed it. Holy smokes. And then how he runs his own production company, how he utilizes VFX to maybe get bigger budgets and or do super special things for his music videos, commercials, everything that he does. So, Josiah, thank you for coming back to the podcast. We love having you. Thank you for being here.
Heck yeah. No, I'm stoked to be back. And this is a fun one to talk about. So I'm so excited you guys reached out.
Ooh, man, dude, yeah. I've watched that like 10 times and I get the chills every single time. Like I told the guys before the show, I will never be that good of a director. Like you just, you crushed it on this. Talk us through like, why did you do this project? Like this is a big project for free. You did it as a spec, right? Yeah. So like, yes, are you just crazy? Or what were you thinking, man?
Definitely crazy. But I don't know. I who isn't, you know, in our field, a Star Wars fan? I mean, most of us are, you know, a lot of us grew up watching them at any era, you know, and at least enjoy some part of it or, you know, and so, you know, it's always been something I wanted to make. And, you know, to gather all the time and resources to make like a full fledged, like short film, you know, it's like, oh, we want to do some like 20-minute thing or something. Like, it's just a ton of work. And so, yeah. My initial approach was, what can I work with my good friend? And we can just like bang out something that's just like, just two of us kind of working on it. And like over the course of a few months, we can work on it in between our other projects, like paid projects, and actually get this thing off the ground. So that really was the motivation was, okay, well, can we make something that's like a minute long or 90 seconds long that just kind of tells like one little story, one little snippet that's like a cool action scene. Our initial plan for this was never for it to be a trailer. Like, and our initial plan was never to like leak it online and do like this fake release. Our whole thing was like, oh, we'll just make like this short little, this little snippet of a Sith jumping off a TIE fighter onto an X-Wing, chop it to the ground, and then emerge from the ashes. Like, from inception to the final creation, nothing really changed in that story arc. That really was just it. And so not really like a storyline or anything that we're trying to pitch today. It was just like this cool, like moment, you know, this big, cool moment. And that was always the goal of making this. I guess I lost train of the initial question, but that was kind of like the initial like goal to like, you know, like why I wanted this to exist.
That's awesome.
Yeah. That's an interesting train of thought. I really like that. I've kind of had like a similar one in the sense of like my big issue I found with last year is I don't have a ton of free time to like do passion projects. And like you said, you know, to do a short film, 8 minutes long, 5 minutes, even longer, whatever, you know, it takes a ton of time. And so I've been trying to do the same thing, is conceptualizing short films that are essentially like a minute or less. Just so I can get a lot more content to really build out my reel. Cause you know, end goal is obviously for me at least, you know, is to direct and write for narrative based work. So is that something like you just recently started approaching, or has that been like a process you've been doing for a while with passion projects?
Yeah. So that's a good point. I would say, no, this is something I always do. I always allow time to do passion projects for myself. It is 100%. The number one way that I get work is literally like people sometimes see my music videos, sometimes they see commercials, but it's also, you know, for people who are listening, I don't know, you know, it depends on where you're at, but like a music video, I can direct a music video and I can get 2-4 million views on the video, but nothing really gets directed back to me because it can still, it's label, it's, you know, it's to the label, it's to the band. You're not really getting, you know, my name out there per se. And the best way that I found to actually get traction and to get snowballing effects is actually just to release my own stuff, the stuff I'm most passionate about to work on. So spec pieces, personal pieces, I've done those for, you know, as long as I've done work. And those are always the ones that people reference. People always reference when clients reach out to me, they reference, you know, the Star Wars stuff or the short films. And they're like, oh, that like sci-fi one you did, it was like so cool. And like, and that's the stuff they reference. I've landed, you know, my biggest jobs that I've landed over the last year have been ones that have referenced directly my short film work, or literally like Instagram posts or like these little 30-second snippets are like, I don't know what project that was for, but it looks so sick, we want it for us. And I was like, that was me in a costume in my basement doing something, you know, and then just like just messing around in After Effects, you know, and the next thing you know, it lands you a job. So, you know, I think a lot of times if you kind of get stuck in this rut of like, oh man, I really want to be like doing the next level. I want to be doing like, you know, I want to work with these clients or these projects. And I think like, I found for me, like the best thing I can do with my time is to specifically devote time to doing personal projects. And it's less of like,
so a, how do you do that?
Oh, I did it for me, you know, but it's like, yeah.
It's, I was like, how do we do this? I got to do this right now.
I mean, not just for me. Come on. I'm sharing it to the list. Do you have a personal process? Like, for me, I set a goal to do a short film a month, but then, you know, sometimes projects come around and then obviously I don't always meet that. Or I haven't always met that this year, obviously, but like, how do you hold yourself accountable to that? Like, is there something you set in your calendar?
Is
like,
there a goal in general?
Yeah.
Yeah. So there actually is. I found, when I'm sort of conceptualizing stuff, I mean, as I'm sure you guys have, you just have like folders on your computer that are full of like kind of half started ideas, yes. You know, but when I finally kind of decide on like, no, this is the one I want to make. So using the Star Wars as the example, it's like, okay, no, like, the Star Wars is the project that I want to make happen. So at that point, literally set a release date, you know, for myself. And, wow. You know, and we held to that, you know, my buddy Jake Dalton and I, we were just the two of us working in the post side of it. And like, we literally just like picked a arbitrary, you know, you just pick this arbitrary date. And it all stemmed from a few years ago, watching an interview with Arnold Schwarzenegger, and he would talk about when he was training for events and like, cause people are like, oh, you're so cut, your physique is so good. And he basically was like, yeah, I'm strong, but I don't look that good all the time. What helps is knowing that I have a movie that's shooting at this date that's starting, or I have, you know, a Mr. Olympia like event that's happening on this date. And so it gives you a specific goal to work towards. And that's like always stuck with me, where I'm like, I do my best work when I even like self-police and I like self-set like dates. And it's like, I mean, technically it's right, just me. Right. I'm the client, I'm the whatever, but like, I found that how, and it could be so arbitrary. Like you just pick, you're like, okay, like April 13th, like that it's going live no matter what. It doesn't matter. Like if I have to spend the whole night up, you know, the night before making sure my export is correct, I'll do it because it's like, I want to hold myself to it because that's where I find I can actually consistently get work out that I'm proud of.
It's so fun too, because like, it's your passion too. Like
yeah.
This is what you love to do. This is why we are doing this, because we love to do it. And so many times we forget to do, or we don't do what we love to do, right? Because we're doing client work and other stuff. But it's like, in this case, this stuff that you love to do, it's helping you build a portfolio in the direction that you want to go. It's helping you bring more awareness towards yourself as a director and the filmmaker that you are, rather than maybe a music video where the direction is on the band itself, right? And it just makes you feel good. And so it's like, why wouldn't we always do this, right? And it's such a simple thing, but it's like, it just, it takes time, it takes money, it takes dedication, all of which you don't get paid for. And it's like, I only got time to work on paid stuff, but the benefit, like, it's like a long-term investment, right? Like you need to be willing to invest in yourself.
The investing is like, that is honestly like the biggest thing. It really is. It's like, you're banking on yourself. You're saying, yes, like my work, my portfolio, the stuff I'm passionate about. And the thing that I love about it is that when I work on passion projects, I am, you know, I'm an unfiltered Josiah, right? It's like, this is me at my fullest, you know, where it's not, I'm not being filtered through what a band needs to service their song. I'm not in service of a commercial where we need to tweak certain ideas or creatives. I'm like, this can be anything. And it's really just whatever makes me the most excited in the moment, I can put all that energy into. And so at least for me, I found that is then how some of my best work is created, because it's like, I'm not being like held back or through filters of other things. It's kind of like, no, this is like, if I pie in the sky, if I could just make something, so then you just do it. And honestly, I've found I think sometimes I've overthought things in the past too, where I have kind of been like, oh, this is like a feature idea, or this is like a 10-minute short story idea or something like that, you know, and it's too grand. It's too much to get off the ground, because even if you're trying to do like a 2-3-4 minute long short film, it gets really expensive really fast, and you're pulling on a lot of favors from friends and all this kind of stuff. And I've found sometimes the sweet spot is even just, what can I achieve that just can make some cool little 30-second or minute long loop, something that can work well on social media, that like can still kind of scratch that itch a little bit, you know? And so I try to set myself kind of reasonable goals, because it's not reasonable to be like, hey, I need to do paid work because I need to get paid, and also I'm going to shoot, you know, 2 short films, you know, a week or something. It's like, it's an impossible task. So I'm trying to be reasonable, but I think that the payoff has been tremendous, because, you know, that's the stuff that people know take the most note of. And and it's a lot of fun. And honestly, to even address, you're talking about like the budget thing, I think for me, like leaning into like my favorite style of filmmaking is I always try to find the cheapest solution as possible. I've often found that I can get away with a ton because I think you have to just picture about like, what is the final piece going to look like, right? And so a lot of the Knights of Ren is a good example. I knew that so many of the shots are going to be these kind of faraway silhouetted shots, and I'm like, I don't need to buy some big elaborate costume. I don't need to custom sew or build or make something out of, you know, I was like, I'm just going to get bed sheets and like a black long sleeve shirt and like, and cardboard. I use cardboard to just make together the, like the Sith mask. I use my daughter's old Lego box. Literally, it was a Lego box. And like, and just cut it out, taped it together, you know, spray painted it black. And I was like, this is going to be fine. So I think a lot of times just leaning into like the cheap filmmaking side of it has been something that I've loved to do. It's like almost like it's a different way to kind of attack your projects, but then you don't have to stress about like, oh, I need to drop like $1,000 on some custom made suit. You're like, I don't know, I just use bed sheets. Like, I don't know, we'll just make it work, you know.
Kyle, guess what?
What's up,
dude? We got a new season long sponsor, and you won't believe who it is.
I think I might have an idea.
Riverside FM, the same platform that we're using to record this podcast right now. We got them on as a season-long sponsor. We were using the platform before they're a sponsor, and we're stoked to have them on this show as our sponsor. They're the leading podcast, video, and audio platform. Top podcast hosts like Gary Vee, Guy Raj, and so many other use Riverside as well. You can edit your videos within Riverside. You can do small little snackable clips. You can auto-create transcriptions with Riverside, and so much more. So if you're looking to get into podcasting in the new year, go over to riverside.fm, check them out, and you won't regret it. See ya. Now let's get back to the episode. So let me put this in the context real quick for our listeners. So you released this 60-second trailer. It went on the internet. It quickly got several million views within the first couple of days. People went out of their mind. They thought it was the real thing. They thought it was Lucasfilms creating this. Meanwhile, you are wearing a cardboard mask with bed sheets, and then you created this in your basement for how much money?
I mean, it was little. I think the most money we spent was I bought some music from Pond 5, like a music resource. I think it was like $70. I mean, it was literally like this essentially cost nothing but the time. You know, my brother was involved, who did the Sith, did the acting for the Sith. Like I said, I just used leftover costuming, some leftover like clothing costume that I had, and bed sheets, gaff tape, stuff together just to hold it on his body. And then, ran out back, like live kind of in the country, and there was a huge mound of dirt that was in the middle of one of the fields, and so that's what I had him climb on top of to make it look like he was climbing on top of rubble. And I wanted to shoot everything practically with my camera so I could get natural tracking moves, like the camera's actually being held by a real operator, because I think it just helps elevate it. And then a bunch of the shots I got shooting my brother on a trampoline. We had a big outdoors trampoline, so he was bouncing and jumping off of it onto a crash mat. I have this like stunt crash mat. So he was, you know, bombing off of it. So that's how we could get like a really good movement from him jumping from the TIE fighter to the X-Wing. So, I mean, super guerrilla filmmaking, but like, you know, that's what, and we use like the sky is the blue screen, you know, it's like a nice bright blue sky. So I'm like, all right, get the camera low enough and we can just chroma out the sky. Like,
wow.
There you go.
Like, what kind of like planning went into this process? Like, for our listeners, we don't really do much with VFX, or we haven't at least talked about a lot of VFX, right? So just, yeah. And I know that this is different because this isn't a client project. In the
you make me want to do it. You make me almost want to do it. Almost. Almost. Like this close. This close. But I know how hard you have to work to do it.
Yeah. And how talented you are, and all the skills that you have. But like,
unbelievable.
So let's just talk about how you planned this out and how you brought it from an idea, you know, through pre-production to production. Like, what did your pre-production look like? Was there any kind of pre-production that you did for this?
Yeah, so actually there was a ton of pre-production. Whenever there's visual effects involved, I've always found that the more time you can place ahead of time into your pre-production, figuring out what shots you need to get, how you want to get those shots, there's a lot of problem solving with VFX because there are so many ways to achieve the same look, right? So for instance, I have the shot of my brother jumping off of the trampoline onto a crash mat. So for some of the shot, I'm able to use the blue is the sky to chroma key and just color them right out like you would a blue screen or a green screen, right? But then his feet start to enter into the frame and get past the sky. And so now it's like, well, now I have to go in and do rotoscoping and I have to kind of go frame by frame and like cut stuff out. So those are two separate processes in the same shot. And so using that as an example is like, I knew that going into it. I knew by when I was going to frame up my camera, I'm like, okay, most of the heavy lifting can be done by just cutting out the sky, but then I'll need to spend some time just manually going in and tracking stuff out. So having a good idea going into it and knowing which shots I wanted to do lockdown camera shots and which shots I wanted to do handheld and moving. So I wasn't just randomly guessing and doing it on the day. I knew exactly which shots. And some of that just comes with experience of doing it. You know, there's no one all answer. You know, I can't sit here and be like, so you're for your first shot, always move. For your second shot, never, you know, there's really no one shoe fits all. However, I would say knowing the process and knowing what I wanted to achieve with each shot, I knew which ones made sense. I knew, okay, we'll shoot this part in the studio, you know, in my basement, we can shoot this one outside. So the pre-production was huge. I probably spent a lot of time figuring out exactly what kind of shots we wanted. Ironically, I just posted today a fun little clip of the very first thing that I filmed, which was literally a Lego set. I had a TIE Fighter Lego set and I had a little Kylo Ren action figure. And with my iPhone, I just set it all up on my bed and I'm just like panning with my iPhone and doing kind of a real time, like, okay, action figure jumps off here and lands on here. And like, it's super janky, but I was able to get the timing and figure out like, yes, this move feels cool. I think this is what we're going to want to do. And using that, it was like, yeah, that's our shot. So once we had that, then it was a matter of just going out and filming each one of those little individual pieces. But the pre-production, I would say the planning still rolls into all that, because even after I shot a bunch of the assets, then I had a bunch of footage to collect. And so I ended up doing really rough cuts. And it looks like the rough cuts are hilarious because they kind of look like your temporary effects. It kind of looks like it's your first day doing VFX at all. You're just doing rough cutouts and like sort of just like, it's all 2D images of just like TIE Fighters and X-Wings just sort of like awkwardly sliding across the screen and stuff. But you can get an idea for the pacing and the timing and really. So I fleshed out the main edit using just essentially cutouts of everything, you know, just like these little janky two-dimensional moves. And I was able to fully lock in the timing and the pacing of everything so that we knew when it came time to do the heavy lifting of actual VFX, which takes an exorbitant amount of time, we weren't wasting time or wasting shots. It's like, no, we know exactly what we want to get. So the planning was huge, because then when we started handing off shots and some of the shots Jake was working on, some of the details I was working on, and the way we were able to collaborate, we both knew exactly like, okay, this is exactly a 7-second clip, or this is exactly a 2-second clip. And like, so we already had that locked in. So we're not wasting, because VFX just takes a really long time. You know, we're trying to stay as efficient as possible.
Yeah. So you went into production with a shot list of knowing exactly what you needed to shoot then?
That was huge for me. You know, even with something so short, you might be tempted with something that's really short. We're like, oh, it's only a minute. Let me just grab the camera and run. Sometimes that absolutely does work. But I would say for this one, we knew that every single shot had to have VFX applied to it. So there was no way to like not plan that ahead, because you have to know. You're like, is this a lockdown shot? Is this not, you know, how much wind? Are we going to add a digital cape? Do we need more wind on the real cloth? You know, so there were a lot of different things we had to figure out basically per shot.
Yeah,
do you go for it?
I was going to ask, do you have like a checklist for our listeners, like your go-to checklist of like things you kind of need to think about if you're planning to do any kind of video effects for a project? Like, what are your top 5 or top 10 most common things you just, you need to know, like whether it's a lockdown tripod or mm-hmm. handheld? What's like, what else? What are some other big ones?
Yeah. So I think, one thing that, like if I'm collaborating with somebody else and they're trying to provide me assets, I always like to have a safety shot, and then I like to have the quote unquote like the real shot. So you know, let's say we have a shot where, you know, we need to have, you know, somebody come running into the scene and you want to do like an explosion behind them. The easiest way to achieve that shot is a camera locked down on a camera on a tripod. And it's just totally locked down. And maybe you set up a green screen. Somebody comes running into the scene and say, oh my gosh. And the camera blows up and they run away. Okay. So that's our safety shot. We know that we're safe. We know that, like, you know, at the end of the world, like, we can still just make this shot work. This is fine. However, the more like money shot of this would be like a handheld shot where you're pushing in towards the actor and you're running with the camera handheld and you're like, get up close to their face. And then, you know, the camera's moving. There's a lot more things that can go wrong with a shot like that. Maybe there's too much movement. Maybe you block things weird. So for me, I'm always like, if if we're going to do VFX stuff, you know, it's a little different for me because a lot of times I know exactly what works and what doesn't as I'm filming it. Cause I'm like, I'm the one that's going to have to work on this. But quite often, even with that, I'm still shooting safety shots for myself. We'll shoot it the way that, like, the hero shot, the way I want it. And then like, all right guys, let's just do it one more time as a safety. And I'm just going to do a boring lockdown shot. So that's one thing that I would say is, you know, especially if you're new to this, just shoot duplicates of everything, shoot your safety, boring lockdown. And then, also, shoot plates. Like if you're going to shoot mm-hmm. a lockdown shot and you have somebody coming in and there's an explosion, they run out, have all your actors pull out the green screen, pull out everything, and just get a steady shot of just the background. Cause so often you'll find like, oh shoot, I need to paint this out. And then you're like in Photoshop trying to clone stamp, there. You know? So yeah, exactly. So I would say that. And the other thing is, this is big, for VFX. I always say, shoot wider than you think, because you can do so, like, every camera shoots at least 4K at this point. Like there's no need that you need to like crop in really close to somebody's face. It's like shoot a little bit wider. So we have room to track. We have room for tracking data. We have room to do any sort of post shaking if we want to add a little bit of shake. So I always tell people, like, whatever you're comfortable shooting, like literally give me like another inch on the top and bottom, you know, and we can always crop in a little bit, but gives us more data to work with.
Yeah. That's a great starting point.
Awesome.
I think that hits it all. So we have a shot list. We know exactly what we're shooting going into this. We're shooting safeties. We're shooting plates. We're shooting handheld, real camera motions and in there. And then so you put together your assembly, and that's mostly like for timing. You get all your timing done with rough VFX figures just so you can really lock in the timing and know exactly how long your VFX shots are going to take before you spend the work on actually doing all that. So you lock in the timing. You get all the music. All that stuff's good. And then you divvy up your VFX work of depending on what artist and whatnot. And so what does it look like? Like you said you had these 2D models and stuff, but like, did you just like, you know, download these assets online? Are there like assets libraries of like, cause you had Star Wars planes, you had fires, rubble on the ground. Like where did you get all this stuff?
Yeah. So, I mean, assets are kind of like all over the place. There are a lot of resources to buy stuff like off CG Trader and Turbo Squid, but a lot of those, you can even sort just by free on those sites. And there's just tons of free models. And in fact, a lot of models end up being free because people just put work in and they just put it out. So a lot of stuff in short films, you know, like rocks and stuff like that. If I'm remembering correctly, I think the X-Wing, I believe, was a purchased asset. I don't remember because that was one of the first things that we ended up snagging that we were working with. But like the assets are available everywhere, and especially like Star Wars. Are you kidding me? That's like the easiest thing in the world to find. You can just Google right now, like, you know, X-Wing model, and you're going to find any varying degree of details, you know, for that. So then everything, you can just start assembling all those assets together in a 3D software. So that's where a lot of this stuff Jake was building. So I had like my timed out shots. I had like my timed out shots with like all the pacing and everything. And then we had cut out the Sith. So he's, you know, jumping or whatever, flying on the ship. And then he was able to pull in the 3D model of the ship and just track it right with the guy. So we're actually like panning through the shot. I was creating, clouds and stuff in Photoshop. So we had like all these big back plates for all the clouds. So painted by hand, like all these clouds in Photoshop. There was like so much, like all these like hidden things. And then with stuff that's free, this is the other fun thing about doing passion projects, is that a lot of times you can get away with just like taking assets from other stuff, because it's not a paid project. It's all under the Creative Commons, clause. You can piecemeal stuff. So it's like, I was taking sound effects directly from just like rips from Star Wars games and that kind of stuff, because it's like, this is non-for-profit. Like this is just, we put the disclaimers on it. Like this is, it's fine. So that's a little flexibility that you get by doing passion projects. Because it's like, yeah, if a client reaches out to me and says, we want to do a Star Wars movie, I'm like, well, we need to get Star Wars license, and unfortunately that's where, that's
different story.
That's where it's not going to happen. Different story. Yeah. Exactly. So, that's another benefit too. So yeah, I just pulled assets like all over the web. Like it was such a hodgepodge mess. Some of those wide shots, like even had like lightning in the background, and we took some of the lightning, we isolated it from some of the slow-mo guys' YouTube channel where they had done lightning in slow motion. And so we found like in the back, we found like a little piece and we're able to isolate that, expand it, colorize it, whatever. And we're like, oh yeah, it looks sick. So it's like, just taking like bits and pieces, like those final shots, it's like, there's so much happening, it's this big poster board of stuff happening. But I think that's kind of the joy of VFX is, if you look at the final piece and it looks cool, it's hard, that's all that matters. It doesn't matter how much duct tape is, on it being held, holding the whole thing together.
So you made this and then you released it. What was your release plan like? Like, was it just like, yo, let's throw it up on YouTube and see what happens? Yeah.
So the release is so janky because initially it was just like, oh, let's just make this short little action scene. And then once the pieces were coming together, I had the idea. I was like, oh, you know what? This kind of feels almost like a mock trailer. I was like, why don't we just like tweak some of like the classic Star Wars verbiage that we know, just toss it up. My buddy John, who's acted in tons of music videos and short films for me, has a great voice. And I was like, do you want to just like do a Sith read? And so we ran over to a studio. And if I'm remembering correctly, I don't think we even really had a script at that point. We just like pulled up like a bunch of like Star Wars phrases and we're just like tweaking them a little bit to try to make something. So we're spending there. We have like an hour long of him just trying everything under the sun. And finally we landed on that. We're like, oh yeah, this is sick. So then edited the whole thing as kind of like this trailer. And once his voice was in there, and then I threw a Lucasfilm like logo at the beginning just to like feel what it felt like. And I was like, oh, this feels kind of real. So like Jake and I hopped on a call and we're like, should we like do something with this? I'm like, it feels almost like this could pass as like either an official leaked trailer or it could also feel like an internal trailer. Cause internal trailers are made a lot, right? Like if you're trying to like pitch it to studio executives or whatever, and you're like, here's our idea for what we want to do. So those things exist. So we're like, maybe we can make it look at the bare minimum. If people didn't bite on it and think like, oh yeah, this is absolutely happening, they might think, maybe this was a pitch, maybe this is like Zack Snyder pitching a Star Wars movie, internally, So that was kind of the idea. So in order to make it feel realistic, I knew I wanted to make it look like it was at a screener or something like that, like at a theater. And so I ended up projecting it off of my laptop and I recorded it with my cell phone. And I wrapped my laptop all in like black cloth. So just the screen was protruding. And I played the movie back on my laptop, and then I pumped it through my PA system. So it was reverberating through my basement. So I had this really loud, big, bassy sound. So the sound effects sounded like you were in a big theater. And I held my camera close enough that it looked like you were just looking up at a theater screen. And it was really fun because when it finally went live, a lot of people were commenting. They were like, well, this was obviously shown at a theater. So like what theater went? And like everybody trying to dissect it. I was like, it was literally my MacBook Pro. And I'm just like here with my camera, like right here. Like it's just so, it's so dumb. Oh, and so then, amazing. So recorded this, made it so it looked kind of fake, and then just released it, made a brand new YouTube channel. And just released it on the brand new YouTube channel. And
With no subscribers, nothing.
We made a brand new channel with literally nothing. And then
I love you.
That's so crazy. So I went to bed that night with like 25 views, and then somebody got a hold of it. And my buddy Jacob, one of his friends, was like, oh, like let me throw this up on like a Star Wars leak like Discord channel, see if anybody bites on this. And so it was totally removed from us. And so his buddy threw it up. like I said, there were like 25 views when we went to bed. It was probably mostly just Jake and me making sure I was upright, you know, and woke up in the morning and there were thousands. And all of a sudden the articles started rolling in. We're like, oh, I think this is actually working. And then like, you know, it was just like boom, boom, one after another. And we got like Forbes articles and like people retweeting. And then for a while, there were actually other YouTube channels that were getting more views than we did because like they had ripped it and they were doing like reaction videos. And they're like, Disney's going to take this down. Like, we need to talk about it real fast, you know? And like,
oh my
so
God.
It ended up like blowing up in there. Yeah, it was. So that part of it was really fun, seeing everybody trying to figure out if it was real or not.
Oh man, I actually didn't see the version, but it was like the movie theater clone. I just saw like your fan version.
Yeah.
I got to go back and see that movie theater. What is it called on YouTube?
Yeah, so the original upload, I believe. Gotta
put that in the show notes.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to put that up. So I rechanged it now. Now it says Star Wars Knights of Ren trailer leak. Initially, it was just called like Knights of Ren leak was like all that it was, like all lowercase. We've since come out and like even in the description and stuff commented on it and said like, hey, this is a fan thing and pointed back to our channels and that kind of stuff. But until we came clean, we let it sit for 1 week and didn't comment anything about it at all. So. Yeah.
Dang, dude, that's so amazing.
Oh man. On a brand new YouTube channel.
Yeah, man. That's dedication. That's really thinking through the process there. I love that.
I see how you did this movie theater stuff and yeah, it's like
I'm curious too, with something like this, you know, like just listening to you like talk about going to the studio and like recording the voiceover and all that stuff, I can see like the joy and the passion like when you talk about that. I'm curious, like, how do you make sure to keep the passion project fun, you know, because sometimes, you know, you get so invested in it, you get other people involved, it can get stressful, anxiety sometimes, right? Like trying to meet those deadlines, trying to make everything happen. Yeah. You want it to be as good as possible. How do you make sure that your passion projects stay fun?
You're having fun.
Yeah, absolutely. So I have found, you know, and for every person it's different, of course, but my like personal life hack that I've found for this stuff is I literally don't tell anyone I'm doing any of this until it releases. And it has been like consistently the biggest fuel for me because it's stuff I'm working on. I'm like, this looks so cool. I'm so excited. And I'm like, I'm literally not going to, I don't tell like parents. I don't tell siblings unless they are physically involved in it, unless they are physically involved. So it's like my brother knew because he was on the trampoline, but like my mom didn't even know. Like I literally didn't tell like anyone that wasn't involved.
Why not tell mom?
With this project? So, like, no, nobody knows. So, like, and that's, you know, you're wanting to know how I keep the passion alive. And that's how I do it because I'm like sitting on these projects that I'm so excited about. And like the only way I know I can talk, you know, I set this on myself, but I'm like the only way I can talk about it and share about it is if it actually goes live. And so that's consistently just been like this fuel for me where I'm like, oh, I got to go. And then that paired with, just setting a release date and letting, you know, just doing it. Like, that's great. I think the other thing for me is my personality, my temperament is, anytime something is too similar, it gets boring and I lose the passion for it. It's one of the reasons I faded away. Like, you know, every filmmaker starts off as like a wedding videographer, right? You know, but one of those things is I faded away from that because I was like, wow, every wedding to some extent is kind of the same thing. It, you know, there's not the same level of problem solving as there is with other projects. And so for me personally, that just, it started to become something that wasn't fun for me. And half the reason I'm in this industry and this is my career is honestly fun. Like that's like number one. This stuff is so exciting. I get so passionate and excited about it. And I'm like, I don't want to lose that, you know? And so that's why I work for myself and I don't work for an agency anymore. You know, it's like once things started to be a little bit too much samey, it's like, I want to just do my own thing. So with even passion projects, I found that that's the same thing. So I like to find something new that I haven't done before. And in this case, it was like, oh, let's do a fake trailer. And a lot of that, like I was passionate about the piece, even when it was just going to be the short little action scene. And like my excitement level went through the roof and all of a sudden it started to feel like a fake trailer. And then we had these ideas for the release. And it was like, all of a sudden it was just like, it almost went like got exponential. So there really wasn't a burnout with it. It actually, for that particular project, it actually got like more exciting. But I think for me, to keep myself from burnout, just pursuing different types of things. You know, if you want to do short films like once a month or something like that, maybe try different genres or try different mediums. Or like, even if you haven't done VFX, maybe you're like, let's try VFX. What would it look like if I had an asteroid in this shot coming towards Earth? Like, let me just try to figure it out, you know?
Right.
And even with that, I would say, yeah, I don't know the good place to put it, but like, I would say, you know, if you're thinking about dabbling with VFX or you want to take it to the next level, like reaching out to people that are doing it and enjoying it. Like, we love talking about this stuff. Like, this stuff is so much fun. And even like, I have hopped on video chats or phone calls with people that I'm not even directly working on their project, but they just want some help, insight. They're like, okay, like, these are the shots we want to get. Do you have any idea of problem solve? Like, what makes the most sense? And it's like, okay, yeah, green screen this, or like, don't even worry about green screen for that. Like, you know, don't forget your safety plates, like that kind of stuff. So I think, like, touching base, like, we live in such an amazing era of filmmaking. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. Yeah. The fact that we can be friends with people across the country, across the world, get insight from everyone, and like, have these real relationships and real friendships, and like, all supporting each other. And like, that water's just supporting everyone, you know? And I would say most of us out there, really, we're in it because we enjoy it. And like, we're more than happy to like, spread the love and share what we know.
Yeah. Right. Not only that, but you're able to make videos like this that look like that for a couple hundred dollars, right? Because of everything that we have at our advantage now. And so it's just, it's crazy, man. Like, I showed everyone I could that trailer. It's like, my friend, I know this guy.
It was fun. I mean, we got like, you know, we got reports to the grapevine that people were passing around, like on set, like while they're filming Mandalorian season 3 and stuff like that. We're like, oh, people are like actually like watching this, like that are doing the real thing, you know? And we're like over here pretending. You're like, but I don't know, don't forget about me.
Yeah, I know.
It's gonna open doors for you, man, for sure.
Yeah, man, it's exciting. You know, so I, for the audience, I've known Josiah, I think 3-4 years now. He was originally the winner of the Jacob Owens film contest that we did. I think the first year that we did it, you won with your short film. It was a horror film. And again, you used VFX and you had this like just gnarly scene where this person was taken away and whatnot, right? Like, I think because of your VFX skills, you're able to bring a whole nother dimension or level of production quality to your videos that just is advantageous in everything that you do. Like, you also do this for your music videos. You also do this was sometimes your commercials, right?
My music videos.
Yeah.
We did superheroes. Yeah.
And, you know, so like, I would say like, this has to be a huge skill that you have at your advantage and disposal. But like, how are you able to leverage it with clients is what I'm trying to get. Like, does it help you make more money? Or at the end of the day, do you just do it because it's cool and it makes your portfolio look better?
Yeah, well, I mean, of course it's both. I mean, it really is. I make the stuff that I love to see and the stuff that excites me. You know, it's like, that's what I try to pursue. So, you know, even if a label or a band comes to me with a pitch for an idea, a lot of times I will just 180 and be like, okay, yes, we can do that. Yes, I can do a warehouse performance video. But if you, but if there was an alien in it, you know, but for me, it's like, for me, it's about like, you know, just being like, well, you know, I can, yes, of course I can do this package for you. No problem. However, here's an idea I've been sitting on that I would love to try out. And so like, I think just feeling free and not feeling like you have to like say yes to everything, I think, has really helped me like kind of navigate those waters. And like, and I do get jobs because of it. You do get jobs because of the passion projects, and people call up and they, you know, or you get a private message and they say, hey, I just saw this work. Would you make something like this for us? And I think that's where you can kind of snowball the pricing a little bit, because a lot of stuff with VFX, sometimes you just don't know how long something is going to take or what the steps are involved. You know, there's so many unknowns about VFX because so much is done, you know, when you're filming on set. If you're doing no VFX, once your camera's set up, it's like, oh, let's slide the lights in, let's whatever, adjust your actor. And then once you film, it's done. Like, it's locked in the camera. You're like, well, maybe I did multiple takes, but ultimately it's set, it's locked in stone. With VFX, the sky's the limit. And at any point you can just wipe away and start over again. So sometimes it can create this bit of a Pandora's box. It goes back to the planning side. I really try to nip that in the bud with clients, where I'll provide a really strong mood board and like shot, you know, shot overviews and that kind of stuff. So that it's like, yeah, if we're trying to do an alien planet thing, we're not going to just pivot and like, oh, now it's like some industrial thing, right? It's like, no, we still kind of have to stick to the concept. But Yeah. And I think even to go back to our earlier conversation, like filmmaking tools, especially for VFX and 3D work, have never been easier and more accessible. I mean, it is crazy what you can do even just purely on your phone. I've seen people just do really creative VFX stuff just with their phone. But even beyond that, it's like Blender completely free, Unreal Engine completely free. There are huge mega softwares that are completely free to use. You don't have to drop any money and you can just learn them through YouTube tutorials. It's what I have done. You know, it's like, it's literally what, how any of us have really learned, you know, in this kind of day and age of filmmaking. So yeah.
What software did you use for this trailer?
So the trailer, so this one, the heavy lifting of 3D was done by Jake and he used Cinema 4D. So that one is a paid, paid software, but that's one he's been using for years. And we've, so working with Jake, this is a good example of like, finding good people that you collaborate with, right? You know, we kind of operate in this like Venn diagram where we both do VFX work. I'm more like the bigger Venn diagram for me is like the practical shooting of stuff. Like I can build sets, build costumes, good with actors, like can wrangle everybody together to do that. And then Jake's side of it is like, he's a god with VFX, you know? So it's like, he'll just boot up Cinema 4D and can help like visualize all these crazy ideas and help us pull together all these assets. And then right there in the middle is where we learn, you know, we know how to communicate. We know what each person needs. You know, I can take certain projects up to a certain point and hand them off to him. Like there's all this like back and forth. We just like have an open Dropbox or whatever. And we're just, you know, files going back and forth and constantly working on each other's stuff. And you just build those layers up. He's a freelance VFX artist. He used to work for Video Copilot. And then a few years ago jumped and he just does, you know, freelance work at this point as well. So yeah, he and I are always collaborating on stuff. We got a few more fun little, shorts in the back burner that I will not talk about until they are done. but yeah, it's, amazing. I think finding people that you just click with and that are, you know, that's huge. You know, I'm really into, collaboration and finding people that you really click with and then just, yeah. And especially if there's that kind of like overlap where you each kind of have your skill sets, but there's this cool overlap. It's like,
yeah. And I would say like, you can crush anything. Once you have these skills and you know how to leverage these digital resources, I feel like you can make videos for much cheaper, but charge more and make more money. What's up guys? We're back at it with another sponsor, which is ShareGrid, the largest camera sharing community on planet Earth, where you can rent or buy cinema gear. Now, ShareGrid.com is perfect if you're trying to test out a camera before you buy it, or if you want to upgrade to a cinema camera for your next shoot to shoot that crispy 6K footage, 8K, 12K, find it all on ShareGrid.com. Or if you're looking to make some extra money, you can go to ShareGrid to rent your gear out or even to sell your gear on ShareGrid.com. It's a professional way of renting and buying gear. Super safe and secure. They have insurance behind all of their transactions. So if you want to join the camera sharing community today, go to ShareGrid.com. You won't regret it. Now let's get back into the episode.
No, absolutely. And I think so to address this practically, it's like, yes, you know, when you're doing a passion project, a lot of times there's a lot of unknowns that you're diving into because you're like, this is a cool idea I have. I don't know how to get there. And so you're really trying to kind of break new ground for yourself as a creative. And I think once you get there, then you have a good idea of all those steps. And for me, I found that when it comes to VFX work, by the time I'm done, I'm like, wow, I could recreate this project 10 times faster. But at the same time, I'm like, I'm still going to charge a premium for it because the end result looks so good. And so you can, that's when that kind of snowball effect kind of goes into effect where people are like, hey, I love what you just did with that music video. I want one. And you're like, that's sick because I know for me, I'm way more efficient at making this. I can build that virtual set faster. I can do the green screen cutouts way faster. I can do the elements and all the ambient lighting and all this sort of stuff so much faster, but I'll still charge you the same, if not more, because now more people are interested in the work that I have. So I think that's how you can leverage it to snowball into bigger clients and more exciting opportunities.
Love that. Yeah. I mean, I guess the nice part with video effects too is the clients are typically not necessarily always there with you when you're doing the video effects process, but do you ever have a point where like you have to educate the client on that? I was actually I made a post about this kind of earlier this week, you know, on how it's important to make sure to educate your client, you know, that you know, yes, I might be able to do something super fast and efficiently. And like, essentially you have to make sure to educate your client. Like, don't be fooled by how fast I get this done. Like, this isn't easy to do. I can do it this fast because I've been doing it for a very, very long time. And I've kind of mastered this craft, if you will. Like, how do you go about that process of educating the client on that, when it comes to video effects?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, it's sort of like, what's that story about, you know, the guy that knew what's, you know, the repairman that knew what screw to turn. And he charges, you know, comes into the woman's house, fixes the washer by turning one screw, you know, and bills her for $100. And she's like, you're billing me $100 to turn the screw? And he's like, yeah, to turn the screw is only $1. To know what screw to turn is $99. And I think like, that's kind of where you get to play that card as a creative. If you're running your own business and stuff, is to really, without being cocky, but to be confident in what you know, and to be like, yes, I am efficient, and I'm efficient for good reason, because I've put in the 10,000 hours. I've put in all this work. I've grown my portfolio to be something that I'm proud of and that other people are noticing. So, you know, having a bit of self-worth is like, okay, yes, I am efficient. I can knock this out over the course of a weekend, but I'm still going to pay, I'm still going to charge a premium. But there is that education, right? There is that, where it's like, and so I think a lot of times, even breaking it down, because a lot of people don't understand the steps, and especially when it comes to like, the VFX world, I can, you know, I'm efficient in it, but there are still a lot of steps. It's like, okay, we'll set up a green screen. We need to shoot you over the green screen. I need to pull you into After Effects. I need to pull out all the green. I need to touch up anything, you know, any sort of hands that outreach the green screen. I need to rotoscope and then pull it all in, color correct, then pull it into Unreal. And like, so you can kind of go through the steps and be like, there are a lot of steps involved. And I think, yeah, just staying open with the communication about some of the steps that are involved can really help. Because I think for a lot of people, and I've been finding this, is that if they don't do VFX, it can feel very much like magic, and you don't really know. Like, you don't know. You're like, am I asking a big thing or am I asking a small thing? I don't really know. You know. Mm-hmm. And so the more I collaborate even with other friends and other filmmakers that want me to help them do VFX on like their music videos or short films and that kind of stuff, a lot of times that's me just even spending a little bit of time to educate and be like, okay, what you're asking right there is actually an enormous task. Like, that's going to take so long. One, it is possible, but two, it's just going to take way too long. Here's maybe another option. So I like to have those conversations very early on with people and with clients. And I often tell people too, I say, you know, if you want to tell me a general idea of what you want and I can help you pinpoint a more specific attack, that can really help. Because as a VFX artist, you have a lot of tools in your tool set where you know, like, okay, this type of shot is something I can efficiently do quickly. So if we're on a tight schedule or tight budget, I can make it still look really pretty, but I can kind of fall back onto these tools that I understand already.
Yeah, I feel like that communication and that client education is kind of always there, no matter if you're a VFX artist or not, just you're a filmmaker, and they're still not aware of everything that you're able to do as a filmmaker and how much it all takes as a filmmaker, right? And even just editing normal videos, like how long that just takes, right? Yeah. With no VFX. So
yes,
I think it's an important part of just client communication in general. And you're doing it even more maybe with VFX, because it's even more complicated in some ways. But the importance of that is always true.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. And one thing I would say is, you know, to even go back to why clients even reach out to me in the first place, because of the passion projects, is that, you know, a lot of times clients don't know what's possible, or they don't even know what they want until they see it, right? They see it on somebody else's music video, they see it on somebody else's commercial, and they're like, hey, that Ford truck commercial is really cool. Can you make that for us? You know, it's a lot harder to just like pitch them something pie in the sky where they don't have any examples. So that's another reason I would really advocate for getting out and shooting stuff yourself. Because for a while I was sitting on skill sets that I had. I was sitting on skill sets for like visuals that I was like, these look really cool and I love these. But no one was like biting on them, because they're like, they either didn't understand or you don't get it. As soon as I put together a 30-second little Instagram loop, all of a sudden the DMs are like, hey, I saw that project you made. Like, could we get that for us? And it's like, sure, let's do it. You know? So, and that's kind of a twofold, because one, now you have a good idea of what even to charge, because you know what it takes, because you already problem solved a bunch of those stuff.
Right.
Two, you landed a client doing work that you're really excited about, because this was something you wanted to make anyways. So it's like, I think that's the exciting thing. You're really kind of opening up a lot of doors for yourself.
Yeah.
I love it, man.
Yeah. That's awesome.
I hope more people go out and make passion projects. spec project. Yes. Build a portfolio with the things that they want to create. Because again, we do this because we love to do it and we want to bring these stories to life. And you're never going to find the time to do it if you don't make the time for it, right? Yeah. And I don't know if you like don't have to, like, you go into an extreme but not telling your mom, not telling I think everyone, but the thing is, everyone has their process, right? And that's what's important in this. It's like, stay true to who you are, figure out what you want to do as a creator, figure out what works best for you as a creator, make that happen, build towards the direction that you want to go towards, right? And just keep working hard at it. And man, it's exciting. It just wants, I want to go pick up a camera right now and do some big stuff, right? So, Josiah, thank you for coming on, man. Like, you're always a treat to talk to. You're super talented. Everyone, go follow him, go watch him, go hire him, go do everything with him. You can find him on Instagram at JosiahX. Okay, we'll put him in the show notes as well. We'll put the trailer in the show notes. So thank you for coming on tonight. You can find me at JJ Engler, Kyle at Cal Visuals. We'll be back next week with another episode on Lunar Videography. If you haven't had a chance to review us yet, go over to Apple Podcasts.
Yes.
Leave us a review. We'd appreciate that. Also, check out Jump Studios, jumpstudios.io. Upgrade your life. Let's go. So, Josiah, Kyle, great week, man.
Heck dude, yeah.
Amazing.
Thank you.
You're amazing. Thank you for coming on.
Much love.
See ya.
See ya.